Thank you. Христос, Отечественно, Славяне Ищи, Доброто, Святанте, Себе, Соти, Доброто, Доброто, Ано, Шипоте, Байща, Велики, Искане, Пане, Бачаре, Славяне Ищи, Доброто, Павелики, Пане, Бачаре, Ищи, Валидан, Страх, Велики, Пей, Взи, Глава, Ищи, Кришна, Читанье, Пане, Терани, Сидва, Изгидане, Ищи, Васи, Глава, 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 Ши Ши Рада Кришна, Гопа Гопа Нат Шама, Панда Вера Кунда Гири Гопа Данки, Нитра Бендам Ки, Навади Майя Пудам Ки, Гопа Майи Ки, Муна Майи Ки, Тоси Деви Ки, Бхакти Деви Ки, Санкиртан Йоги Ки, Харинам Санкиртан Ки, Гранта Рад Шима Бхагава Ватам Ки, Ши Ши Рада Гопа Вивала Ки, Самавета Бхакти Венди Ки, Гопа Майи 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 Ки, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Of the demons.
Bhavam,
the mentality. Mahapurushatam.
Mahapurushatam.
The position of an exalted devotee.
The position of an exalted devotee.
Gata.
Gata.
Obtained.
Obtained.
You have surmounted the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, and because of this liberation, you have given up the demoniac mentality and have attained the position of an exalted devotee. Purport.
Yeah, can you get my small bag?
Lord Vishnu is the Mahapurusha. Therefore, one who becomes a Vaishnava attains the position of a Mahapurusha. This position was attained by Maharaj Parikshit. It is said in the Padma Purana that the distinction between a demigod and a demon is that a demigod is a devotee of Lord Vishnu, whereas a demon is just the opposite. Vishnu Bhakta Smito Daiva Asuras Tad Viparyaya. Vritrasura was considered a demon, but actually he was more than qualified as a devotee, or Maha Parusha. If one somehow becomes a devotee of the Supreme Lord, whatever his position, he can be brought to the position of a perfect person. This is possible if an unalloyed devotee tries to serve the Lord by delivering him in this way. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami says in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumba Yavanaka Sadaya Yenye Chapapa Yadapashraya Shaya Sujanti Tasmai Pabhavishnave Maha Kiratas Hunas Andras, Pulindas, Pulkashas, Abhiras, Shumbas, Yavanas, and members of the Kasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, for he is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Anyone can be purified if he takes shelter of a pure devotee and molds his character according to the pure devotee's direction. And then, even if one is a Kirata, Andhra, Pulinda, or whatever, he can be purified and elevated to the position of a Mahapurusha. Om Jnana Tumirandasya Kenanjana Sadakaya Chakshu Unnitam Minatas Maishi Yuri Maha Mukam Kuroti Vashvam Bhagam Mangayate Gari Yakipata Maham Bhavi Shivam Vinatana Namah Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutuve Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Mordavani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shantari Pasta Chade Sitarane Chari Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadar Harshi Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I saw one verse of the purport that I believe is a quote from Bhagavad Gita. I just wanted to find it. Yes, it is. So, it's a very wonderful verse in the sense that I thought it just came to me, forgive me, minutes before I sat down to chant Jai Radha Madhava, that it might be a good verse to speak on a particular topic. And that's why I was standing by the computer looking for a few references. And although it's not necessarily the perfect audience for this topic. Some of you may be interested and some of you may benefit from some of the points I'd like to bring to light. And those who may be interested, they may listen to the recording and I can at least establish some of these thoughts for others to think about. I'll get to that. First, I'd like to at least discuss some of the philosophical points that have been brought to light by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. This verse is spoken by Indra, and this is the chapter on Vritrasura's glorious death. And Indra, after hearing Vritrasura's statements, which obviously reveal Vritrasura's exalted character. He was not an ordinary demon, as we know from the description given in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vritrasura was previously Chitraketu Maharaj. Chitraketu Maharaj was an exalted king who achieved by having received instructions from Narada Muni. He achieved the opportunity to get the direct darshan of Lord Sankarshan. I think he was given a mantra by which he was able to get Lord Sankarshan's darshan in a matter of 1 week's time. And he became an exalted devotee of the Lord. And then, as later described, I believe in the sixth canto, he was traveling throughout the universe in the, I guess it was a flowery airplane of some sort. What was it? I can't remember what was given to him for traveling. He was traveling with a lot of heavenly damsels as well, but he was always absorbed in the glorification of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada actually explains that was Chitraketu's position, is that wherever he went, he was glorifying the Lord. And he happened to perchance to come upon, in the course of his travels, Lord Shiva, who was sitting in Kailash with Parvati on his lap. And when he observed this, he was thinking that Lord Shiva was behaving in an appropriate way, sitting in an assembly of great sages. He thought that although his character was exalted, that it was improper for him to have his wife Parvati sitting on his lap in that assembly. And he spoke in a somewhat disparaging way about the character of Lord Shiva for not behaving properly, which he felt was his due responsibility, considering Lord Shiva's exalted position. Of course, Lord Shiva's exalted position was so exalted that he didn't have to take such matters into consideration. And he was not anywhere at fault. But nonetheless, Chitraketu Maharaj pointed this out and said something about it within earreach of Parvati. And when Parvati heard these disparaging words spoken by Chitraketu Maharaj, although Lord Shiva was not at all disturbed, and because Lord Shiva was not at all disturbed and took no action whatsoever, did not try to defend himself, he didn't feel insulted. In fact, the other sages who were present there, they took their cue from Lord Shiva's position. They also didn't react in any particular way. They just took it as not as a disparaging words, but just as something that should have been, didn't really need to be mentioned publicly. And Parvati, nonetheless, she was very indignant, as we see in different examples how she becomes indignant when disparaging words are spoken about her husband. In the case of Daksha. Prabhupada makes the point, actually not Prabhupada, I think the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes this point, that there's a vast difference, a gulf of difference between what Daksha did and what Chichiketa Maharaj did. Daksha was blatantly wrong, and he was insulting Lord Shiva because of his excessive pride. And because of his excessive pride, therefore, his offense to Lord Shiva was not of the same nature as Chichiketa Maharaj's offense. Chichiketa Maharaj didn't speak his offense out of pride. He spoke the words that he said he was speaking because he was just simply thinking about what would be proper behavior for such an exalted sage. And it was not born of pride. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur therefore makes it very clear in his commentaries, I think it was in the sixth canto commentaries, that we should not compare the two. And not only should we not compare the two, but actually another point that Srila Prabhupada brings to light is that this arrangement, Parvati's cursing of Chichiketa Maharaj, was an arrangement by the Lord to bring Chichiketa back to Godhead. And therefore, anyways, that's another point that is brought up by our acharyas. But when Parvati heard those statements, she was very indignant. She became critical in the sense that he thought he should be, not critical in the sense, but she thought that she should be punished for his words spoken about Lord Shiva. So she cursed Lord Shiva, she cursed Chichiketa Maharaj to have to take birth in the body of a demon, thinking if he takes birth in the body of a demon, then he'll learn a good lesson and never do anything like this again. Now, of course, taking everything into perspective, this also dates back to a time when, who was it? Tvashta. Yes, it was Tvashta, who was the father of Vishvarupa, who was killed by Indra. And Tvashta, who was the father of Vishvarupa, he also performed a yajna or a sacrifice. He wanted the retaliation of Indra, and he performed this big sacrifice to punish Indra, and he chanted a mantra within the sacrifice which would increase the enemies of Indra. That was his intention. But actually he didn't chant the mantra properly. So instead of saying, I can't remember what the words were, but instead of saying the proper words, just because of a slight discrepancy in his pronunciation, the mantra he chanted in the sacrifice produced a different result. Instead of increasing the enemies of Indra, the result was that Vitrasura would be born, and who would be Indra's enemy. And Indra's enemy meaning that Indra would have to kill him. And when, of course, when Indra heard about the birth of Vitrasura, when Vitrasura took his birth, who was Chichiketa Maharaj, happened to be Chichiketa Maharaj, who took birth as Vitrasura, then Indra went to, who was it? Who did he go to get to? Anyways, he went to somebody who was, maybe it was Brihaspati.
Dadichi.
Huh?
Dadichi.
No, that was the bones Dadichi had to go to, but he went to somebody, it was Brihaspati, I guess, to get instruction that you have to go to Dadichi to get his bones and use those bones for, this is what you'll use for killing Vitrasura. And so it was all divinely arranged that Indra would kill Vitrasura, and Vitrasura, of course, knew, he was conscious of the fact that he had been cursed by Parvati, he had to take birth as a demon, and he was very eager to be killed. Because he was thinking that upon being killed, he would be released from the curse of Parvati, and because he was actually the exalted devotee previously was Chittaketa Maharaj, he would rejoin his worshipful Lord. So it was all a divine plan. So Vitrasura, here Prabhupada is bringing out the point that Vitrasura was certainly, he was considered a demon, but actually he was more qualified as a devotee or a Mahaparushya. Although he was considered a demon because he had taken birth as a demon, his consciousness was not in any way demoniac. His consciousness was one that was fixed always on the Lord. And because of that consciousness, when Indra was fighting him and killing him, cutting off his arm and then cut off another arm, and Vitrasura was basically preaching to Indra, like, this is, you know, this is glorious. Finish your work. And he was also instructing him from a completely devotional standpoint of seeing how everything is ultimately the will of the Lord and how he's fully dependent on the will of the Lord. And by being fully conscious of the Lord, then one will surely achieve success in life. So therefore, please let me continue to serve the Lord and let me get rid of this demoniac body and finish your work, finish up your business. And therefore, this is what Indra is saying. Indra is saying, oh great demon, I see by your discrimination, endurance, and devotional service that despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul, and friend of everyone. That was the verse that Dhirshanta Maharaj spoke about yesterday, and he spoke so nicely about what is the internal mood of a devotee, how the devotee is always accepting all obstacles as opportunities for surrender to the Lord, and because he's fully dependent upon the Lord in all circumstances. And Maharaj very nicely elaborated, describing the qualities and characteristics of a devotee who thinks in this way. In fact, I was, as Maharaj was speaking, I was thinking of one of my favorite quotes from Amrita Vani. I didn't say it because at the end of class the topics went to something else. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, in one quote, Maharaj was saying that how a devotee accepts everything that happens to him as Krishna's will, and he never becomes deterred in his determination to serve the Lord. And that even if some obstacle appears in his path, he uses that as an opportunity. He gave the story of the donkey. How the donkey was what was it, Maharaj? He was being
fell into
the well, and they were throwing dirt. Who was it that was throwing the dirt into the well?
Well, the farmer who owned the donkey, he decided, well, the donkey's too old anyway, and we need to fill this well up, because it's also an old well. So he called all his neighbors, and they came with shovels and started shoveling earth down to the well.
And the donkey was braying, like in great anxiety, oh no, this is my end. But then all of a sudden he began to realize that he took that obstacle, he took it instead and completely reversed it and realized that this is not an obstacle at all. And he began to realize that all of the earth that was being thrown on his back, he shook it off and he began stepping on it. And while he was stepping on it, the bottom of the well began being raised by all the earth that they were throwing down, trying to cover him. Instead, he was stepping on it, and he just simply stepped on all the earth, and he stepped out of the well. That was great. I like it. And Maharaj was speaking about how the devotee reverses any apparent obstacles of Prabhupada. He speaks about this a lot in different places in the Bhagavad Gita, how a devotee takes all obstacles as opportunities to surrender to the Lord. He gives example in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where purport, he talks about Haridas Thakur, he talks about Prahlad Maharaj. How they reversed whatever externally apparent obstacles were there and used it as a facility to increase their remembrance of the Lord. And I thought of this quote that I oftentimes quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, that he says that everything about the Lord is merciful. There's no inauspiciousness in the Lord's arrangement. Whatever he does is for the good of all living entities. Those conditioned souls who consider interference to their sense gratification inauspicious or as an example of the Lord's cruelty understand only one move, the chess game. And they do not know what will happen four or five moves later. The mercy of Sri Chaitanya Deva and his devotees is causeless and yields no negative results. When a doctor prescribes a bitter medicine, the patient thinks him cruel. When he becomes cured by taking that medicine, though he understands how merciful the doctor really was. So, he only understands one move in the chess game. He thinks, oh, I'm losing. But he doesn't know that, that they do not know what will happen four or five moves later. And of course, the Lord is the Supreme Chess Master, and he's always orchestrating things in such a way to put his devotees sometimes in difficult situations, and externally it may look like a very difficult situation, just as Chitraketu Maharaj may say, wow, you know, he was cursed to take birth as a demon. And not only that, he was going to, by the mistaken yajna performed by Tvashta, he was also destined to have to be killed by Indra. So this sounds like a serious situation to have to find oneself in. Take birth as a demon and then have to be killed by Indra. So someone may look at it as unauspicious, but he was looking at it as just, those were just simply one moves in the chess game. And he could understand that four or five moves later, that everything was going to, he had the vision to accept it as the will of the Lord. And he was simply eager to remember the Lord, because even in his body of Vitrasura, he was conscious of the Lord and remembering the Lord and was preaching. And that's why Indra said to him, O great demon, I see by your discrimination, endurance, and devotional service, despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Personality of God, the Super Soul and friend of everyone. So, such is the position of a devotee, that a devotee is given protection by the Lord. In fact, there's another quote. We were reading this in Hartford, I think, dear Shantamana. We were reading from the ninth canto. Another quote comes to my mind. I wanted to just read that from the ninth canto, if I can find it quickly. And yes, I can't find it quickly because it's already opened up to where we were reading it. Prabhupada was talking about protection of the Lord. And Prabhupada says here, in the reference to Maharaj Ambarish, the verse is, as fire in the forest immediately burns to ashes an angry snake, so by the previous order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately burned to ashes to create a demon to protect the Lord's devotee. The Prabhupada says in the purport, as a pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish, although in such danger, did not move an inch from his position, nor did he request the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give him protection. He was fixed in understanding, and it was certain that he was simply thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the core of his heart. A devotee is never fearful of his death, for he meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead always, not for any material profit, but as his duty. The Lord, however, knows how to protect his devotee. As indicated by the words Pragadishtam, the Lord knew everything. Therefore, before anything happened, he had already arranged for his chakra to protect Maharaj Ambarish. This protection is offered to a devotee even from the very beginning of his devotional service. Kauntiya pratijanihi name bhakta pranishati. If one simply begins devotional service, he is immediately protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Aham tvam sarva papipo mokshayishyami. Protection begins immediately. The Lord is so kind and merciful that he gives the devotee proper guidance and all protection, and thus the devotee very peacefully makes solid progress in Krishna consciousness without outward disturbances. Then he gives an analogy. A serpent may be very angry and ready to bite, but the furious snake is helpless when faced by a blazing fire in the forest. Although an enemy of a devotee may be very strong, he is compared to an angry serpent before the fire of devotional service. So Prabhupada is saying here, I will. You're looking for someone? You're being cold. In fact, actually, yes. Prabhupada is saying here how a devotee's life, a devotee's protection, begins as soon as he begins devotional service. And Prabhupada quotes here in the purport, Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asuras Tadvit Paraliya, which is the Bhagavad Gita verse, 16th chapter. It's similar to the verse in the sixth, where Krishna says, O son of Prita, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from you the demoniac. And Prabhupada explains that the divine are those who accept the injunctions of Scripture. They accept the higher authority of Scripture, and they act for the purpose of trying to elevate their lives. In fact, in the end of the 16th chapter, Krishna states, what is it? Yakshastra vidhim utsvijja vartate nama. That Yakshastra vidhim utsvijja. He says that, I'll get to my point. I need the help of this verse. Yes. He says that Yashastra vidhim utsvijja vartate kamakarita na sasidhim avapnoti na sukam na parambiti. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims, neither perfection nor happiness. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. And then he says, one should therefore understand what is his duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. And Prabhupada explains that this is the difference between the demon and the devotee. The devotee is somebody who acts according to the scriptures, and when he acts according to the scriptures and molds his life to make gradual progress in life, then the Lord gradually arranges, protects him, and gradually arranges to bring him to him by his, even though he may not be pure. Whereas the demons, they completely reject anything coming from the Lord. And in fact, I remember there was a famous article by Jayadvaita Swami back in the 70s, I think. It was quite a controversy. Remember that article, Who Was a Demon?
Yeah.
Where basically the whole article was this, either you're a devotee or a demon. Do you remember that article? Yeah, it was a very famous article. And what he did is he essentially took Krishna's instructions from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and basically explained that what is the criteria of a demon? A demon is somebody who's completely has all opportunity to, he could have all opportunity to make progress in spiritual life, but he rejects it completely and acts completely contrary and has the behavior, the mentality of the demoniac mentality as described in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, because he does nothing for his elevation in spiritual life. Therefore, he's a demon. And he, and if I remember, even he began the article by saying, oftentimes we think of demons as having horns out of their head and red bodies. And he said, but we don't know who the demons among us. It was a typical giant way to swallow article, but it was all according to Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna himself differentiates the difference between the devotees and the demons. So a pious person, he may not be a devotee, but he may not be exactly a devotee of the Lord, he may not be a pure devotee of the Lord, he may not even know what is pure devotional service, but a pious person at least makes some kind of sacrifice for a higher cause. He does it according to some regulations of the scripture. So he's certainly not a pure devotee, but nonetheless, because he's acting for some higher goals, for some purpose of some elevation, then he may not necessarily be put in the category of a demon. But one who discards all scriptural injunctions, acts totally, completely according to his whims, and then he can achieve neither happiness, nor perfection, nor the supreme destination. He doesn't, the point is that he doesn't get the Lord's protection. And in fact, Prabhupada, even the verse Valasya Neha Sharanam Pitaro Nishinha, where, as a verse I oftentimes quote, Prahlad Maharaj, where he prays to Prahlad Maharaj, he says, "Oh my Lord Nishingadeva, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for, not protected by you, cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they may accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, is certainly impermanent." And he gives the example for it. For example, a mother and father cannot protect their child, a boat cannot rescue a drowning man, and even the most expert physician and medication cannot relieve a suffering patient. And Prahlad Maharaj is actually saying that embodied souls are neglected and not cared for by you because of their bodily concept of life. They're not given protection by the Lord. Whereas a devotee, Prabhupada says right here, a devotee, right from the very beginning, he's given protection. What is the protection? That the Lord will, when he begins devotional service, the Lord will, he's the chess player and he's got 4, 5, 6, 7 moves later. It may not look like the devotee is being protected in the given circumstance. It may look like he's in a very dangerous situation, like Vritrasura was in. It may look, why? And somebody may say, why is Krishna doing this to me? People may even reject the Lord. They don't understand why we've been put in this very difficult situation. But they don't know that there's only one move in the chess game. Because right from the very beginning, as soon as one begins devotional service, the Lord is giving his protection, as Prabhupada says in that verse and related relationship to Maharaj Ambarish. So, therefore, Prabhupada continues in today's verse by saying that one can be, it is said in Padma Purana, the distinction between a demigod and a demon is a demigod is a devotee of Lord Vishnu, whereas a demon is just the opposite. Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asaras Tadviparyaya. Vritrasura was considered a demon, but actually he was more than qualified as a devotee, a Mahaparusha. If somehow one becomes a devotee of the Supreme Lord, whatever his position, he can be brought to the position of a perfect person. This is possible if an unalloyed devotee tries to serve the Lord by delivering him in this way. This is the part that I really My mind was churning on. Like I said, just before sitting down, I was thinking about, and if, I'm not going to even have time to do it. I think I'm going to do it tomorrow instead. Will everybody be here tomorrow?
Yes.
I think it'd be better. I stick with the verse today. And tomorrow I wanted to bring out some of the points that were coming in my mind about, is this possible if an unalloyed devotee tries to serve the Lord by delivering Him in this way? If one somehow becomes a devotee of the Supreme Lord, somehow, whatever his position, he can be brought to the position of a perfect person. And then Prabhupada quotes the verse, Kirata Varanjapalinda Pupasha. Abhirashubha Yavanakashadaya. Yenye Chapapa Yadapashra Ashaya Suryanti Tasmaiko Vishnavi Namaha. That Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Pulindas, Pulkashas, Abhiras, Shumbas, Yavanas, members of the Kasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. For He is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Anyone can be purified if he takes shelter of a pure devotee and molds his character according to the pure devotee's direction. Then even if one is a Kirata, Andhra, Pulinga, or whatever, he can be purified and elevated to the position of a Mahapurusha. Of course, that's Prabhupada's glory. That was his, he quoted this verse so many times, Kirata, Hunandra, Pulinga, Pukasha, or wherever he was traveling or preaching. This was a very commonly quoted verse, especially in particular areas Prabhupada was preaching, making the point that even the most degraded classes of men, even those addicted to all kinds of sinful activities, they can become purified by association of devotees. In fact, the famous story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is giving the explanation of the Atmarama verse, Atmarama Chulamunayo, where he tells the story of Magari Mahanta, is he uses that particular story as how even somebody who is destined for so much suffering, because Magari the hunter not only was he a hunter, but he took pleasure in causing pain. He took pleasure. Imagine the mentality, taking pleasure in causing pain to animals. And right from his very birth, he was trained by his father to half kill, not kill animals, but to half kill animals and watch them writhe and suffer and die. He didn't want to just kill them. He just wanted to half kill them so that they couldn't eat and they would suffer, bleed to death and die. So you can imagine the destination of somebody like Makari. And then the whole story, I think I told the story just recently when we had a program in Connecticut, that Narada Muni saw these three animals. There was a deer, then there was a boar, and then he saw, next was a rabbit. And he was walking along the path. He was coming from Narayan, he was coming from Vaikuntha. And he was coming to take his bath in, I think it was Allahabad? Yes, Prayag. And he was coming to take his bath there, and he happened to see these animals writhing in pain. And he looked off in the distance, and he saw standing behind a tree was this man dressed in a skin of an animal with a bow and arrow. And he realized that this person must have been the person who was responsible for this, so he decided to walk towards that person to find out what he was doing. And when he was walking towards that person, all the other animals that Magari was taking aim at was ready to half kill and shoot them. They all ran away because Narada Muni left the path, and all the animals who were there in the forest saw him and became scared by Narada's presence and ran away. And Magari became very, very angry. Look what you've done. In fact, it says that he even wanted to use abusive words, but he saw that Narada was a sage. he didn't use abusive words, but he was very angry at Narada. He said, "Now look what you've done, all these animals that I was about to shoot with my arrows have run away." And then Narada said to Magara, he said, "So you are the person responsible for this, I can see. Why are you only half killing them?" And then he said, "My name is Magari. I've been taught by my father from my very birth to use my bow and arrows for hunting. And he taught me how to half kill animals. And I take great pleasure in seeing them in pain." And Narada Muni was feeling so much compassion. He says, "You take great pleasure in seeing him pain, but can't you understand that you're going to suffer so much pain for the pain that you're causing to these creatures in this way?" He says, "This is the fact that you live as being a hunter and killing animals is only a minor offense on your part. But the fact that you take great pleasure in giving pain to others and have killed animals, that is only going to bring about so much pain for you in the future." And he began to explain how all these animals that you're purposely causing pain to will come back and kill you in the future. And then Magari was listening to Narada Muni. One other interesting point that I like to make this point is that Narada Muni says, I have one favor I want to ask of you." And Magari was thinking, what would you like? Would you like a skin? An animal skin? Would you like an animal?" And so he was thinking that Narada Muni, Atmaman Manyate Jagat, a person who has this kind of mentality, thinks if somebody's asking for something from somebody, he wants something for himself. But Narada is saying, "No, I have one favor to ask of you. I'm not interested in your animals or animal skins. My favor is, please, if you're going to shoot these animals with the arrows, just kill them. Don't half kill them. Just kill them. You're a hunter, and you have to live by killing. Just kill them. It's better than half killing." And then he explained why killing them was better. And he said, "Because of this pain that you're causing them. In fact, and I have one other quote in this connection that came to my mind just recently as I was telling this story. And it's a quote that many of you might have heard me speak of before. It's a quote where Jiva Goswami quotes about what is disrespect towards all living beings. And he says that disrespect towards all living beings means to willfully want to cause them pain, to harm. He defines that as disrespect. And he quotes the verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that sharp arrows that pierce the chest and enter into the heart are not as painful as the arrows of insulting words of a materialistic person which enter the heart and become lodged there. And I was thinking, and Jiva Goswami in his commentary says, actually, arrows that enter the heart and become lodged there of insulting words is more painful than an arrow that pierces the heart. Because when it pierces the heart, you're killed. But an arrow that enters into the heart and becomes lodged there is much more painful, because then you have to live with that suffering. And he gives the analogy that it's even worse, the pain of insulting words of a materialistic person. And I was thinking, this is the same thing that Narada Muni was actually saying to Magari. Better than half killing, living to cause them pain and enjoying the pain that you're giving these people by half killing them, better you kill them. Because that's, at least you're killing them because it's your prescribed duty, you're a hunter and you're killing them and you live by killing. Of course, there's still reactions there. It's not that there's no sinful reactions. But the point that he's making is that to simply desire the pain of others is demoniac. And the reactions is untold. That those people that you intentionally cause pain to will come back again and cause pain to you in the future. And that's Narada Muni's instructions to Magarya. And then the point that is brought out by Lord Chaitanya in his explanation of the Atmarama verse and when telling the story, is he's just telling that what is the great benefit of the association of a devotee, that even like a person like Magarya, who derived great pleasure in half-killing animals, became an exalted devotee. Because upon the association of Narada Muni, he became contemplative about the pain and suffering he caused to others, and he asked Narada, tell me, what should I do? How can I become free from all of these reactions that I've pain that I've caused to living entities? And Narada Muni, therefore, said the first thing he instructed him to do is break your bow. Now, for a hunter to break your bow, it's a lot of faith required in that because it's your means of livelihood, you know. So, but nonetheless, Narada instructed to break your bow, and then Magari could have been thinking, well, how could I live? But then Narada Muni instructed him how he could live. He said, don't worry, you just simply become. You chant the holy name of the Lord, you worship Tulsi, and you and your wife live simply and chant. And Krishna will provide everything that you need. And he even said, I will personally provide it. I think that Narada Muni said, I will arrange everything for you. Essentially, it's because Krishna will arrange everything for his devotees. And then Magari took up his instructions and became a great devotee. Was it Magari that people used to bring? Or was that the prostitute, Haridas Thakur? It was Magari. People used to, when they heard about how so this great hunter became a devotee of the Lord, people used to bring him food, and Magari would only accept only what he needed to eat on a day-to-day basis. He would not keep extra, he would give away everything he didn't need. And everything that he required, even though he broke his bow, was all provided ultimately by the will of the Lord. And then one time Narada Muni was coming back. He was traveling with Parvat Muni. And they were returning to that place where Magari was worshipping the Lord, chanting the holy name of the Lord, worshipping Tulsi. And when Magari saw his spiritual master, Narada Muni, off in the distance, then he didn't immediately get down to offer his dandavats, but instead, before offering his dandavats, he took his chadar and he cleared. He appeared, and Prabhupada Muni was wondering, what is he doing? Why is he spending so much time cleaning the road for you to, before he offers his dandavats? Why doesn't he immediately offer his dandavats? And then Narada Muni explained, actually, he's not cleaning the road. He's sweeping away the ants so that when he offers his dandavats, he won't cause any harm to the ants by offering his dandavats. And then Prabhupada Muni can immediately appreciate, and he said, such is the nature of association of a devotee, that if one gets the association of a devotee, even a person like Magari the hunter, who took great pleasure in causing pain to other living beings, can become an exalted devotee of the Lord. That's what Prabhupada is saying right here. He said, anyone can be purified if he takes shelter of a pure devotee and molds his character according to the pure devotee's direction. Right? Even the most sinful, demoniac person, by the mercy of a devotee of the Lord, can become Mahaparusha, as Prabhupada says, Mahaparusha. He attains the exalted position of Mahaparusha. Therefore, one who becomes a Vaishnava attains the position of Mahaparusha. And then he said, this position was attained by Maharaj Pariksit. So, I won't get to that point that I was thinking about. I'll speak about it tomorrow. In this connection, some things I wanted to say about the Mahaparusha and some of the directions he's given that we can hold our lives. Any questions? Yeah. Okay, we have a question.
I have two questions. one question, the first question. Brigari looks very sinful, much more sinful than me. But he surrendered immediately, but I still cannot surrender. What's the reason?
He got the mercy now in the morning.
So many people met Srila Prabhupada, he's also pure devotee, but many of them didn't surrender immediately.
No, there was some Sukriti. There was some Sukriti, must have been some Sukriti from a previous life. Prabhupada says there's different types of Sukriti, the people have accumulated from previous life. And although maybe that was just one move in the chess game, being Magari the hunter, that actually he might have had some Sukriti from a previous life, whereby his Sukriti got him the association of somebody as powerful as Narada Muni. I mean, we see so many examples of Narada Muni, what he does very, very extemporaneously, and very, those who got his association just surrendered to him. Look at the Hayashvas and the Shavalashvas. They were all destined to become grihasthas, and Daksha had instructed them to perform austerities and penances, and Narada Muni slipped in and convinced all 100,000 of them, you know, to take up the path of Nivriti Marga and renounce all their worldly sacrifice and to become devotees and go back to Godhead. I mean, sometimes such exalted devotees as Narada Muni can do something like that. And Prabhupada evolved, no, it's not Prabhupada, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that one can come to the platform of devotional service but from two ways. He says the first way is as a result of contact and devotional service in a previous life, and the other is by the powerful preaching of a Vaishnava in this life, even if one has not had contact with the Vaishnava in a previous life. So you don't know what was there in the previous life of these individuals. You don't know. And for us, we should not think that, you know, that, oh, I'm so highly qualified, I know I must have been this and that in the previous life to be living in the temple and serving the Srila Prabhupada. No, we should be thinking, whatever position I've achieved in this life is by Prabhupada's mercy. By Prabhupada's mercy. So, although we may not immediately surrender, nonetheless, as Prabhupada said, protection begins immediately. As soon as we take, there'll be a few more moves that we're not having. We don't have the insight to see as Vritrasura did or as others did. There's a few more moves, but they're not many. Because protection begins immediately. And even though it may appear I'm not so fully surrendered in this life, but if I just simply stay in the boat, stay in the boat, that's all. Just stay in the boat. The boat will ply across the ocean. It will take us to the other side. I know that's just your first question, but that's my last answer. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Swami ki.
The demons among us, by Jai Dwayne. They found it. Right at the very beginning, he says, there are always two kinds of living beings in the creation, the divine and the demonic. He said, but a demon need not be a huge monster with 10 heads and 1,000 arms, nor a little red fiend with a pitchfork. In fact, the demons who live among us generally appear quite ordinary. Demons exist, millions of them, and they live among us, mostly unrecognized, wherever we go. You gotta read the article.